congratulations on recapturing the NXT Championship here in your homeland of Japan. How does it feel?
That's awesome. So, here, right here. So when I was 24 years old, I think, I got IWGP heavy title. First time here. I love this venue. Osaka Furitsu, now Edim Arena. I love Osaka.
All right, folks, well, welcome to the Next Level Wrestling Podcast here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network. I am your host, as always, the Andrew Bello. Very happy to be back on the air. I'm feeling good. I don't know why. There's just like a good feeling in the air. Wrestling's feeling, you know, Raw's finally coming around. NXT's starting up a new chapter. SmackDown is awesome. The pay-per-view over the weekend was really good. I'm also now, again, the champion of my Pick'em League. So, I don't know, maybe that has something to do with it. But all in all, I'm in a really good mood tonight, so let's hope this NXT episode doesn't put me in a bad one, but I can't imagine it will. Always excited to watch NXT. A lot going on, you know, as we're coming out of TakeOver Toronto, they're starting to build a little bit of plot line. Did just want to touch on a couple of things, I guess, just before we even get into NXT, a couple non-related NXT things, or non-NXT related things, rather. Wanted to thank Fame Black, first and foremost, for joining us on the Red Zone this week. Not going to lie, Fame got on, he hadn't watched Raw, I'm thinking, oh, this motherfucker, like, how are we going to get through a show? But nonetheless, Fame stepped up, provided some excellent insight, you know, came back at me a few times, but hey, that's all good, man. This is what we're about. This is what wrestling fandom is about, varying opinions. It is a subjective art form, so, you know, we all have different views, different things we like, different reasons we think things happen, or different things we think are going to happen, and while we're all, like I generally say, very talented and you know, individuals here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network, it's always nice to bring somebody in from the outside, get a nice little exchange of ideas, and the CEO is on shows with me, or I'm on shows with him rather fairly often. We kind of agree on a lot of things, so it is always great to get another opinion in there. So Fame, thank you very much. Visit him on all of his social media platforms at Fame Black, Fame Black on Snapchat. But yeah, I just wanted to thank him for popping in, and for hopefully we'll have him on again. It was a good time. But my man, I gotta say this, if you're listening, next time watch Raw, man. I can only imagine what you'd bring to the table had you actually watched the show. He was joking around a little bit about how, you know, he didn't want to waste the 3 hours. And I'm not going to lie, I took a little bit of offense to it. I like Fame. I mean, after talking with him for an hour or so the other night, I mean, he's a good dude. But I'm of the mind, and I'm going to sound like Sam Roberts here, like, I'm of the mind that, like, I love wrestling. And I have no issues sitting down and wasting, quote-unquote, 3 hours of my life, you know, on any given Monday night, or every Monday night for that matter, to sit down and watch wrestling. Raw has been very, very good. There's just a lot going on now. You got the 205 Live. And if you haven't checked it out yet, please go to our YouTube channel. We are doing weekly 5-minute recaps of 205 Live. I'm dubbing it 205 Live in 5. And I'm not going to lie, that's my baby. That's something I came up with. CEO picked up for me this week and did a hell of a job, so please go ahead and check that out. It's available on all of our Twitter accounts and this, that, and the other thing, but just keep an eye out. Go to thewwpn.com. Everything will be up there, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at wwpnbello. Same thing on Gmail, guys. Hit me with your questions, your comments, anything you got, literally anything about wrestling. Like, I will be happy to talk to you about it, because that's more or less what I'm looking to do with my downtime anyway, is watch and talk about wrestling. So, this week, you know, obviously we have another Iron Woman match, which I think, coming up rather, between two NXT alumni. Obviously I've touched on them multiple times on the show, with Charlotte and Sasha Banks. And the Iron Woman match, I'm not going to lie, when they had it the first couple times, they kept calling it an Iron Man match, And I'm eventually getting to the point to where I'm like, all right, why aren't we calling it an Iron Woman match? And I finally realized that this week is that because they're now only going to be doing 30-minute Iron Man matches, because there's very few rivalries that I think they could even foresee putting together an actual hour-long Iron Man match ever again, even though we have had some fairly lengthy matches with this roster split, because the main events... is sort of thin in both shows, so when they do get these guys out there for big profile matches, they tend to give them some time now, which is something I think we can all agree is a great thing for you know, just the overall entertainment of the show. And if you like wrestling, like, you know, most wrestling fans do, you want to see the best guys out there having the best matches, and that generally requires some time to do so. So we are getting a 30-minute Iron Man match. It isn't an Iron Woman match because it's only 30 minutes, and I think WWE is smart enough to think that some people might draw the line there thinking that it's only an Iron Woman match because it's only 30 minutes and that somehow women are less than men, which we all know isn't true. So, and that obviously, you know, the WWE is an entertainment company, but they're also pretty much a PR firm as well. They have stockholders to answer to, they have advertisers to answer to, networks to answer to, so... they didn't want to create that sort of image, and I don't blame them, frankly. Now I'm looking back on it, it makes all the sense in the world. I'm still going to call it an Iron Woman match because I just think that's cool, and I think it's great that they're giving these women the chance. We haven't had, like, an Iron Man match between two men in God knows how long, and now we have two women's Iron Man matches that have occurred in, you know, roughly, I guess, a year, year and a half or so. Obviously, the first one being Sasha and Bayley coming on top in the last second in that match. I'm predicting... early predictions for this Iron Woman match is that we're going to get very much of a role reversal, where in this particular matchup between Charlotte and Sasha Banks, Sasha obviously being the face, as Bayley was, is going to be playing the Bayley role. I think she's going to go down early. Charlotte's going to pull a few heelish tricks out of her bag to get a win or two or a pin or two up early. And I think Sasha fights back and probably wins this thing right before the buzzer. That's my call. As I was saying on Red Zone the other night, not particularly happy that they're going to end the Charlotte pay-per-view streak. She's officially jumped Sasha in my eyes as far as being my favorite women's wrestler. I can't find a flaw in her game. And while Sasha has very few herself, Charlotte's really just hit another gear. I wish we could see her do more, frankly, because she's just killing everything that they're giving her. But... Iron Man match, 30-minute Iron Man match coming up at Roadblock End of the Line, or as I'm calling it, Roadblock End of the List of pay-per-view names, because that's exactly where this one should be, or has to have been, in order for them to think that this was a good idea for a pay-per-view name. But also Roadblock. Like last year, at least Roadblock was on the road to WrestleMania. This is no longer on the road to WrestleMania, so am I to understand that my road is already being blocked before I get on it? I don't know. It's a stupid, stupid name, and I don't have a whole lot of nice things to say about it. Don't have a whole lot of nice things to say about that card in general, except for the fact that there is going to be an Iron Man match, or Iron Woman match, between two of the best female wrestlers in the world. That's really great. I love Jericho and Rollins. I'm not at all interested in seeing them fight again. We've only seen them fight about 9 times on Raw over the last couple months, and frankly... Roman Reigns, I'm not ready for him to be anywhere near the Universal title at this point. I think because he still has the U.S. title, it's less likely that he's going to actually beat Kevin Owens, and I'm hoping that's the case, because I don't know that I can handle double champion Roman Reigns. Like, it was bad enough that they gave him a belt. I don't need him having two. I also don't need Kevin Owens taking a loss to somebody like that. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm a huge, huge Kevin Owens fan, so I don't want to see him ever lose that belt. Ideally, I'd like to see him hold on to it until Balor gets back so that we could see, you know, what happens there. I mean, obviously, we've seen Balor and Kevin Owens matches before in NXT. I was there live for their ladder match at NXT Brooklyn 1, and I mean, those matches are just amazing. The match in Tokyo that they had, one of my favorite matches I've seen in the last 5 years or so. Just the whole build was so excellent, and the atmosphere, and Kevin Owens throwing the flowers, and like just all the great stuff that Kevin Owens does, and all the great little baby face kind of stuff that goes along with Finn Balor. It was just a really great match. I hope that we get something like that down the line, but it looks like Seth Rollins, based on his promo, is going to be making yet another attempt at winning the belt off of Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens doesn't have Jericho's help, so it'll be interesting to see how they get Seth Rollins back into that picture? And then once he gets it, does Triple H come out immediately and, like, pedigree him? Like, how does that work? Are we building up to Seth Rollins and Triple H at WrestleMania while, you know, I guess it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I just don't want to see that match have the Universal title involved. I don't think it needs it. Seth Rollins is a big star at this point. Triple H is a legend in the business. We're already probably going to be getting Goldberg, Brock Lesnar 3. And, you know, I don't think we need any more part-timers. You know, kind of filling up a big spot on the card. Triple H, you want to be there, go ahead, but keep the title out of the picture. And I this is an NXT podcast, so I didn't want to go too in-depth into that, but like I said, there is a lot going on. We were talking about it the other night, and I just kind of felt like I wasn't getting some things out, so just kind of rambling about Raw and the goings-on in the WWE universe, but we are here in the WWPN universe right now, and this is the Next Level Wrestling Podcast, so I'm going to go right ahead and go right into the NXT recap now, and I'm going to hit you with a NXT alumni spotlight at the end of the show, as I haven't been able to quite get through writing an article regularly and putting it up on the website in regards to the NXT alumni spotlight, but I did write an article that is up on our website about Bray Wyatt, basically about the character of Bray Wyatt, sort of booking in general. It is a fantasy booking type thing, but I assure you that there's a bigger goal in mind here. I'm not just like, oh, let's have Bray Wyatt fight, you know, Kane and The Undertaker at the same time. Like, no, it's not, I'm not just like making matches. Kind of wanted, it was an idea that I had for the evolution of Bray Wyatt based on what we're seeing right now. So if you guys are Bray Wyatt fans, or you're just looking for something to read while you're, you know, sitting on the can, or whatever you got to do, or however it is that you decide to stumble upon wrestling articles, I'd appreciate it if you took a look. So thewwpn.com, it's prominently displayed right next to Mimi's article about Roman Reigns, which is excellent as well. So please check that out if you're a fan of Roman, or if you're just looking to find maybe a reason to like Roman, as Mimi does. And she, you know, kind of talks about his whole career, does a lot of really good research. So, like I said, just give that a read. We always appreciate the views, the clicks, the likes, the shares, subscriptions, yada, yada, yada. All that stuff helps us tremendously. And like I always say, it helps us help you. You guys clearly like our product because you're listening to it. And we want to give you more of it. And we want to give you a lot more of it. We want to better the audio quality. We want to do more stuff on YouTube. We want to, you know, give away prizes and bring on people to interview and this, that, and the other thing. Like, we want to become your central hub for all things wrestling and all things wrestling podcasts. And, you know, we're on the come up, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, we are putting it together. We have made quite a lot of advancements since even I've popped on the network, which has only been a couple months now. It feels like a lot longer. I've done quite a few shows, but you know, like I always say, apparently I'm over with CEO. So as long as he keeps letting me do my thing, I'm gonna do a lot of it, because I like hopping on all the podcasts. I like writing articles, like trying to come up with ideas for how we can make the network better. This is what I spend a lot of my free time doing. So and I do mean free. It is free. I don't get paid for this, and I, you know, while I'd like to someday, I'm not complaining about it one bit. I really do just enjoy being part of this whole process in this platform. So thank you guys for listening. Like I said, I'm gonna go right into the NXT recap and then hit you with an NXT alumni spotlight on the tail end of the show. Keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah. All right, well, that was an excellent episode of NXT, episode 367. We start off hot. I'm going to go right into it. I got a couple things I didn't cover in the intro, and I got a couple other things I want to get to. I'm reading off these notes here, which, by the way, I was listening to Blue Zone last night. CEO got himself an assistant. I'm jealous, and I'm an evil son of a bitch, so not only did I get myself an assistant, I stole his assistant. So Phyllis took my notes for me tonight, and We start out pretty hot here with Team DIY coming out to celebrate their victory from TakeOver Toronto. This celebration goes on for like 4 minutes. They come out. There's a huge pop. There's a lot of chants. You deserve it. DIY. They run through the crowd. This is a well-deserved celebration. Don't get me wrong. It just felt a little long, considering that we were about to get just a spectacular segment. So maybe this was just a little bit of build, kind of get the crowd a little hot, but anyway, this segment was amazing. I'm not trying to critique it. Next up, we get the Authors of Pain coming out. Paul Ellering does a quick promo, just unveiling that, you know, that they've won the Tag Team Classic, the Dusty Tag Team Classic, and they want their shot at DIY and the titles, calling their celebration a bit premature, if you will. So Ellering cuts a good little promo here as he's, you know, as he's kind of hinting at the fact that they're going to take the next shot at Team DIY. The Revival shows up, and they get a massive pop from the Full Sail crowd. I couldn't believe how big this pop was. I mean, the Revival, don't get me wrong, it's been clear that people have appreciated their work, but they've been heels, and they've been getting a lot of boos, and this was a huge pop. The Revival have officially arrived. They are, I'm going to get into them a little bit after this segment, but they come out, they basically skirt their way ever so gently around the Authors of Pain as to not agitate them, and there was a little bit of tension going on. The Revival, they're awesome. They're kind of talking some shit. They're saying that they want the next shot at Team DIY. They're the only number one contenders. They deserve a rematch. They're still the top guys. All the while, as they've kind of skirted their way around Authors of Pain, they're now at the bottom of the ramp. And you have the Authors of Pain at the top of the ramp and Team DIY in the ring. So the Revival essentially have put themselves in the worst possible position as they're, you know, literally stuck between a rock and a hard place. I guess maybe not quite literally, but sort of. So they are, they're talking shit. All of a sudden, the Authors of Pain start walking down to ringside. The Revival trying to tell them to calm down, ease things up a little bit. Authors of Pain give them a push. The Revival retreat. Basically, Ellering closes the segment by saying the next chapter will be written by the Authors of Pain, and it will read NXT Tag Team Champions. So a couple things before I get into how fucking awesome the Revival are. the segment here, when DIY comes out to celebrate, there is just, and I don't know if I just noticed it on this segment and then I paid a lot more attention to it the rest of the show, but the camera work in NXT is the best. Just of all the WWE camera work, NXT's doing it the best. I mean, there was a shot here with DIY. They're both standing up on the ropes facing the hard camera, you know, facing the crowd that faces the hard camera, I guess, and with their backs to the camera. And this crowd, it's Full Sail, but it looked huge. Like, the way that they shot it just was epic in fashion, and it just looked so much bigger than, like, this little studio in a little college down in Winter Park, Florida, and the camera work is exceptional. Having said that, as good as the camera work is in NXT, the ring announcers suck in NXT. My God, they're so horrible. Give me JoJo back, please. Can we have JoJo back? Because they're just so bad, and I just don't, I don't get that, like, big fight feel. Not like I necessarily really get it from JoJo, but at least, like, you know, she's got a nice tone to her voice, and, like, she's got that, like, I don't know, she's got a little, like, pep that these two don't have. Maybe it's a comfort thing, but the ring announcers suck, the camera work is exceptional, and the Revival are the best damn tag team on the planet. They're just amazing. I mean, the way that they came out, kind of bowed up to Authors of Pain almost at first, and then skirted their way, as opposed to, like, trying to walk down the ramp, they kind of walked down by where the announcers go out for NXT, or go down for NXT, and went down the side of the ramp, and they're talking shit, and all of a sudden, you know, Scott Dawson's on the mic, and Dash Wilder's kind of, like, tapping him, like, yo, they're coming, man, like, the Authors of Pain are walking down here, you better shut up, and that, you know, it was just brilliant, the whole thing, like, they sold it, like, they're just so damn good at what they do. The Revival, they're ready. So, like, as far as I'm concerned, let's have a number one contenders match between the Revival and Authors of Pain. Let's put the Authors of Pain over. Let's let the Revival make their way up to a main roster, because they're beyond ready. They're going to make a huge impact on Raw or SmackDown, wherever they show up. We get a little bit of Tom and Corey kind of going back and forth, and Corey, for some reason, is being nice to Tom, and then tells him that he's added a member to the commentary team. So we get Percy Watson, who I guess was in NXT like before it was regularly aired. I don't know a lot about Percy Watson. He seems like an interesting character. He's got a lot of energy. When they showed his little video package, the first thing I could think of is like, let's team him up with Mojo Rawley and like, let's just have super high energy, like guys like just running around out there. I don't know. That was the first thing I kind of thought of. Graves welcomes Watson to the commentary table and then tells him that he looks forward to proving him wrong on a regular basis. So while I still got my beef with Corey, that was a good line, and I'll give him his, you know, credit where credit's due. We got our first match of the night, and it's Nohe Ose and the cruiserweight champion, the outlandish Rich Swann, taking on Sanity. So first and foremost, they're really pushing this outlandish thing with Rich Swann, and I mean, it's a given. Like, I'm looking at him, dude. I know he's outlandish. You don't need to tell me he's outlandish. Like, with Samoa Joe being the inevitable Samoa Joe, like, all right, it's an adjective that wouldn't necessarily have come to mind right away, because, like, just first looking at him, I don't know he's a killing machine, but Rich Swann is outlandish. There's no doubt about it. There's almost no other word to describe him, really, so I don't know why they decide to push that so hard, but hey, if that's what they got to do to Swanny to keep the belt on him and make him a big deal, by all means, like, let that man get paid. That's all good with me. Sanity comes out without Sawyer Fulton. Eric Young has Fulton's jacket, he throws it down in the middle of the ring, stomps on it, throws it out to the ramp, spits on it, and I guess Sawyer Fulton is dead? Like, I don't know, based on the way Sanity acts, like, I would not be surprised to find out that, like, Fulton was eaten or killed and there was some sort of blood orgy involved. Like, I don't know, these people are fucking crazy, and apparently they're now just harming their own, I don't know. So we start off the match with Jose and Wolf. Jose takes control early, gets the early bit of momentum, tags Swann, they hit a little bit of tandem offense, and they send Sanity to regroup to the outside before we go to commercial. Sanity, when we come back, takes control shortly after. They beat down Swann for a while, basically. Jose gets the hot tag, hits a TKO in the middle of the ring to Eric Young, and Alexander Wolf comes in to break it up just in time. Wolf goes to dive at Swann. Swann dodges, and Wolf ends up outside the ring. Swann hits a splash, a Phoenix splash of sorts, from the second turnbuckle to the outside onto Wolf. And at this point in the match, Nohe Ose is also on the outside, and he's attacked from behind by Big Damo. Now, I've mentioned him in the past on the show because he's a sort of one of the newer big deal signings that they've had. And this was sort of an interesting way to debut him. He attacks Jose from behind. Jose ends up, you know, going in to get, you know, Eric Young drags him into the ring, basically hits him with his finish, which is still dope, the wheelbarrow neckbreaker. I'm still so impressed that he could hit it to a guy Nohe Ose's size. Damo essentially comes out and attacks Jose, helps Sanity win the match, and then walks up the ramp and picks up Fulton's jacket. It's almost like, oh man, is Damo going to replace Fulton? And he picks the jacket up and he just spikes it back down and keeps walking. So maybe Damo, they call him Damo. They don't call him Big Damo, but they call him Damo. And he's just sort of a lone wolf. I don't want to compare him to Baron Corbin right out the gate, but maybe he's going right after, you know, Sanity, anyone he feels like at any given time. Maybe the way Sanity is, like, maybe this is some sort of weird ploy, and Fulton and him are going to be part of Sanity, or he's going to replace Fulton after all, but, or maybe he's friends with Fulton for some reason, and he's coming back to avenge the fact that, I guess, his friend got eaten and or killed. But we go to the back here, and there's a couple really sick segments here. So, all right, so we start off the night with the Revival segment. I mean, DIY coming out, that was great, good moment, I popped. The Revival thing was just amazing, so I marked the hell out for the Revival. And then we get a couple really awesome series of events, like, right in a row here. So first and foremost, we go to the back to Regal's office, and Ty Dillinger's walking in to, I guess, essentially retire. He says, you know, I said last week if I couldn't beat Samoa Joe, maybe I don't belong here, which is a pretty lofty expectation to hold yourself to, beating not only Samoa Joe, but at the time the NXT champion, to say that you, just because you can't beat the champ doesn't mean you shouldn't be around is pretty crazy in and of itself. But I think Dillinger's just been down on his luck, and we all feel bad for him. I mean, if you're a fan of Ty Dillinger like I am, and very few are, but if you're a fan of Ty Dillinger, you feel for the guy. Like, he's so talented. He's got so much charisma. He's a little later in his career, and, like, you know, the door is closing for Ty Dillinger. So, like, let's get this motherfucker up on the main roster. Let's put an IC title run on him, like, once, maybe. I don't know, but that would be great. But Ty Dillinger goes to essentially retire, and Regal says, oh, I'm glad you're here. I'm going to be doing a tournament for the number one contender, essentially, for the NXT championship, and I want to put you in it. Do you want to be in it? And he's, yeah, I want to be in it. So he goes ahead, and Regal asks him, what did he want to talk to him about? And he just said, oh, nothing at all. And he turns around and walks out. So we later find out what that tournament's going to look like, but essentially it's going to be four one-on-one matches, and then a fatal four-way elimination match, and the winner of that will go on to face Nakamura or Joe. So right after this segment, we get Sanity coming from, from ringside or from the front stage to the backstage. And there's somebody back there trying to interview them, like, what happened? What's going on out there? And nothing is said by Sanity as the two men storm off, Wolf and Young. But Nikki Cross is standing there. It looks like she's going to say something. And then she turns her head ever so slightly to her right. And there sits the NXT Women's Championship. And she kind of gets this gleam in her eye, like, ooh, pretty. So as she just goes to reach for it, Asuka sneaks up behind her, grabs it, holds it up in front of her, and smiles at her. This was awesome. This was such a fucking great segment. Like, everything about this was awesome. Nikki Cross, like I said, either last week or the week before, like, I felt like she is the most intimidating kind of woman she's well built already, despite the fact she hasn't had a lot of matches, but we at least understand her character. We get that she's a badass. She's sort of, you know, masochistic, and, it's going to be interesting to see how she's, how her and Asuka interact is going to be very interesting. How they go toe-to-toe in the ring physically is going to be very interesting. This is great. Like, I'm all for this. I'm very excited to see how this feud plays out. I'm also kind of excited to see how much Sanity plays a role here. Like, maybe Asuka has to play face now because she's down 3-1, essentially. You know, like, she's facing three people. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. Asuka doesn't need to be a heel or a face or whatever, or she could be whatever you need her to be, but she's always just Asuka, and that's all she really ever needs to be. So that brings us to our next match of the night, and it is Ember Moon taking on Kimberly. So going right from an awesome women's segment into what was a pretty good women's match. I mean, it wasn't incredibly long. It's basically been very similar to some of these Ember Moon squash matches that we've been seeing recently, but Kimberly, for those of you who don't know, is like the Chikara Grand Champion. She's a heavyweight champion in a smaller wrestling promotion. I guess they run mostly out of the East Coast, but Chikara, for those of you who haven't discovered Chikara, go do it. Like, it'll be a guilty pleasure for a little while. Like, I don't watch it regularly. I keep up with it, sort of, but they have their own streaming service and, like, a whole bunch of other stuff. But they're basically, like, a family-friendly Lucha Libre wrestling company. So there's a lot of guys in goofy masks. The crowd is not allowed to curse. Like, you get thrown out. Kevin Owens actually got banned from Chikara for cursing in the ring once. So they have this sort of, like, really cool family-friendly environment. When the crowd, like, chants, like, holy shit, they chant holy poop and, like, you know, like, different stuff like that. It's really funny. It's a really cool atmosphere. They bring in, obviously, Chikara's famous for the King of Trios tournament that they do every year. So they bring in, you know, famous trios from around the world. We've had, like, Bullet Club. We've had guys from Lucha Underground. Like, all sorts of really cool teams. Last year, there was three women's, three former WWE divas were in it as a team. So they bring in people from all over the world. But Chikara's breaking ground in the world of just sort of this diversity, if you will. I mean, they had, like, this great tournament, I believe, and Kimberly ended up winning the whole thing and becoming the Chikara Grand Champion, which is, you know, to have a female heavyweight champion. They did it long before Lucha Underground did it with Sexy Star. So, they're, I guess, leading in that front. But Kimberly's a hell of a wrestler. She's got an interesting look. She's a bigger girl than I remember. I mean, not, like, big, but she's tall and muscular, especially when you stand her next to Ember Moon, who's relatively slight. A short, rather. So this was an interesting match, and it was really funny to me how the tone between these two well-educated, well-experienced indie wrestling women that kind of have been bubbling under the surface for a little while, while obviously the Sasha Bankses and the Baileys and the Charlottes and the Becky Lynches of the world have kind of been getting all the spotlight. But there's been a movement going in women's wrestling for a little while now. I mean, Shimmer's a huge thing, or I guess a big deal, much bigger than any other women's wrestling had been prior to it. So there's a lot going on in the world of women's wrestling, essentially, and these two would be a main event on a lot of like women's wrestling cards or indie cards. Ember Moon does her thing here, but this match like just starts off and it's got like this really cool vibe. Like they kind of go back and forth, a little bit of chain. Like the first 30 seconds of this match was not all that different from the first 30 seconds of the Samoa Joe Nakamura match that we get a little later on in the night, and that's really cool. It starts off with like a basically. They're kind of feeling each other out. They end up in a Greco-Roman knuckle lock, and that's seriously where I stopped taking notes here. Like I said, while the match was short and it was basically out there to serve its purpose, like there was just something beautiful about these two working together. I really hope Kimberly comes in full time, and I hope we get to see more between these two and more of these kind of matches for Ember Moon, more of these sort of intense, less showcasey, more like scrappy battles out of her, and she does have this weird power about her. Like, I don't know if it's sort of the mystique with the whole look and the red eyes, but she certainly has some, she's got a little moxie, and she's got a little bit of, just fire that she comes off bigger than she clearly is. I mean, she's not a very large person, but she still has this aura about her, and it's really cool. And that O face, I'm coming around on it. It looks even cooler every time I see it. When you see like the slow-mo and she's just like twisting and turning in midair and stuff like that. It really is a thing of beauty. But obviously Ember Moon goes over here. They're making her, they're strapping the rocket to her and moving her up the card so that hopefully I'm still assuming she's going to be the one to take the title off of Asuka, but maybe Nikki Cross does, and then Ember Moon overcomes Nikki Cross insanity. I don't know, but any of these situations are going to be really good because it's going to involve two or three really, really awesome female wrestlers on NXT. After this match, we find out who the participants are, and what I'm calling William Regal Presents the Ty Dillinger's Finally Fucking Going Over This Time, Right? Tournament. So Ty Dillinger is taking over in the, he is taking on, rather, Eric Young in the first match. We also have the Drifter, Elias Sampson, taking on Roderick Strong, and Oney Lorcan taking on Bobby Roode, and last but not least, Cien Almas taking on Noé Jose. So I'm going to kind of go through this real quick and give my picks here. I think Dillinger's going to beat Young. I think probably Big Damo comes out at some point and kind of costs him the match there. I think that's probably where Big Damo's first feud is with EY or with Sanity in general. After that, we get Elias Sampson, the Drifter, taking on Roderick Strong. This one was sort of, I was on the fence. I'm going to go with Roddy, even though he's new. And for some reason, they see something in the Drifter, Elias Sampson, but I'm going to take Roderick Strong here. We also have Oney Lorcan taking on Bobby Roode, so I'm going to take Roode just because he's Bobby Roode. He's fucking glorious. And Oney Lorcan, while he certainly has some talent, they haven't really been giving him much, so I can't imagine he's going to be beating Bobby Roode here unless somebody comes out and attacks Roode, which would be very uncharacteristic of a face who you would assume would be facing off against heel Bobby Roode. But last but not least, like I said, Cien Almas taking on Noé Jose. I'm going with Almas. The heel gimmick is really working. He's worked with Roode before. He's worked with Dillinger before. This would be kind of a really cool way for him to kind of work his way into the main event scene, if you will. So I'm very interested to see how those four guys have, chemistry together. Ty Dillinger, Roddy Strong, Bobby Roode, and Cien Almas. Actually, come to think of it, and this is why I was sort of torn on the Roderick Strong, Elias Sampson match, is that I'm thinking at some point, did the Drifter beat Ty Dillinger like as his debut. And then in that case, the Drifter, yeah, you know what? I'm taking that pick back. I'm taking Elias Sampson to beat Roderick Strong. And we're going to get the Drifter, Almas, and Rude, all guys who made their basically takeover debuts against Ty Dillinger and won. And that's how we're going to have Ty Dillinger finally go over. He's going to beat all three of these guys in a single match to take this tournament and to be the number one contender and to go on to be the 10th NXT champion in history. By God, we figured it out, people. I'm so happy. If you all stuck here this long in the podcast, good for you. I'm going to take a little bit of a break here before we get into the main event. I don't really have a whole lot of breakdown as far as the recap goes aspect of this match. This was one of those matches that I really, in order for me to kind of fully absorb it, I can't sit there and take notes because then I can't be like sitting there and stopping and starting. And it's so hard to like pay attention and get a thought down at the same time. So I really just sat back and watched it. But we'll get to that after. Okay, so before I get into this main event here, I did just want to do a couple things that I forgot to drop in the promo. I did do my shout out to Fame Black for joining us on the Red Zone. I also forgot that we had a WWPN debut. One of our listeners, one of our longest listeners, and one of our most loyal listeners, Twitter followers, Gerald Cooper, was on the show with us. Well, not with me, but he was on doing the review of TLC with CEO and you know, and the gang over there. But it was a really, really good debut on a podcast. Like, if you haven't listened to it, go back. I mean, if nothing else, the commentary on TLC is definitely worth listening to, as is everything here on the network for that matter. But Gerald, you know, hats off to you, man. I know you're listening probably, so you know, thank you for popping on with us. We're gonna have you back, and you know, let this just be a lesson to all you listeners out there. Guys, hit us up, be involved with us. We are more than happy to share the platform with you. If you have thoughts to share, if you want to hop on you know, hop on a show or whatever the case may be, you know, follow us, talk to us. Once we get to know you a little bit better, like we know Gerald, you know, we're happy to bring people on. So you could find us at the WWPN.com, thewwpn.com. And also that, I mean, that has basically everything you're going to need, all of our social media, emails. We have a hotline, you know, just everything on there, our articles, our YouTube channel, which we're going to be posting the 205 Live and 5 episodes on. You could find me on Twitter at WWPNBello, that's B-E-L-L-O, and same on Gmail, WWPNBello@gmail.com. So hit me with your questions. Like, guys, I'd love to get to the point to where I'm doing, like, email segments every week. Like, that would be awesome. So hit me up with the questions, literally about anything wrestling related. Obviously, NXT would be preferred, but hey, we could do just about anything on here. As I always say, I'm very grateful to have the platform here. CEO very you know, allows me to do what I want to do, and that's awesome. And hopefully, you guys are enjoying it. You know, so that's that. But as we get into this main event here, Samoa Joe taking on Shinsuke Nakamura in Osaka, Japan. First comment right out the gate is the Japanese crowd. I mean, this wasn't the largest venue in Japan, obviously, but I don't know. Maybe it was just the audio of the show. Obviously, it was shot probably a little differently than they would shoot a takeover or even an episode of NXT. I don't know. I feel like I wasn't getting the pop. I don't, again, maybe it was the audio, maybe it was my TV, like, I don't know, but I, you know, I know that the Japanese crowds are slightly more subdued, and they're not raucous like, you know, a Brooklyn crowd, for instance, but, they were doing the sing-along, and they were doing the yows, and all that shit, and it was great, don't get me wrong, you could feel the atmosphere. This whole match felt like the Thrilla in Manila, like, it just felt like, you know, like Ali and Foreman, or Ali and Frazier, or whatever, you know, like, whoever, you know, one of those old school, like, just big fight feels. And big fight feels something that gets thrown around a lot because JBL's an asshole and he caught on to the fact that that's sort of what everyone's looking for and he says it all the time. But this felt like a big fight feel. Like, this is the third of a series of matches between two warriors. You know, building up to the match, like, you had every reason to be really excited about this. But I'm not going to lie, I didn't love the match. It felt short. It felt, like, unepic. I get that this was sort of a house show that they decided to air, but I don't know. I felt very unfulfilled. Like, the second match in the series was really good. The first match in the series was slightly underwhelming as well. Like, I was talking about this on Red Zone the other day. Like, maybe it's just me. Like, and occasionally I hit this weird cynical, I'll never be happy wrestling fan mode. But I don't know what I'm expecting out of a Shinsuke Nakamura Samoa Joe match. But I'm expecting more than what I'm getting out of Shinsuke Nakamura Samoa Joe matches. And I don't know. Maybe it's their styles are too similar. Like, they are. I mean, Joe doesn't call himself strong style, but he obviously has, in addition to his slightly cruiserweight kind of tactics and his MMA background, he's a striker. Samoa Joe is quite the striker. I think I even called him one of the better strikers in the history of wrestling, which I'll stand by. I mean, Samoa Joe will fucking kill you, in case you haven't heard. But, you know, there are, I don't know what I'm expecting from these guys, but I'm just not getting it. And I'm really just, I'm waiting for this to go away now. I want both of them on the main roster. I want at least one of them on the main roster, and I want Ty Dillinger to face the other one for the NXT title. But we do ultimately, the match itself was kind of, like I said, it was just kind of we get a spot where Joe is going for the Chimeraplex, and now apparently, despite the fact that he doesn't necessarily bust that move out all the time, everybody's got a counter for it all of a sudden, like, they know, Nakamura slips out of it. He does hit Joe at one point in this match with, like, the most ridiculous bridging suplex I've ever seen in my life. The bridging German suplex, but he gets so much elevation on it, and Joe comes, like, straight down on the back of his neck. It looked brutal, but at the same time, obviously, Joe's a tank, so he knows what he's doing. So does Nakamura. Right after that spot, actually, Nakamura goes for a Kinshasa, and Samoa Joe hits him with the snap power slam. They just sort of go back and forth. And so I'm not going to go too much into the nitty-gritty on the recap of the match here. Obviously, unless you've been living under a rock for 4 days, or you're just not big on social media, Nakamura wins this match. I wasn't going to live under a rock for 4 days. I didn't do a report on it because for those of you who really went out of your way to avoid it, I didn't want to spoil it for you, but I think we all kind of knew this was coming, and they're going to have a rematch, which has already been announced for Melbourne in Australia, and it's going to be a cage match. Now, long story short, when I first got onto this podcast network, essentially, I had heard that there was going to be a steel cage match announced between Shinsuke Nakamura and Samoa Joe. I could have swore CEO even played footage of William Regal himself announcing this. And then they kept doing these matches, and none of them were in a steel cage. I just thought I just lost my fucking mind. And maybe I did. But this is apparently the match. I don't know if this was the one that they were talking about this whole time, or if they just kept pushing the cage match back, or what the case is. But in my opinion, like, this match tonight should have been the cage match, and I get it. Maybe I don't get it. Like, I was just about to say, maybe they don't want to ship the cage out to Japan, but they're gonna have to ship it to Melbourne, Australia. So I can't imagine that that's all that much easier. This match tonight should have been a cage match, especially if they're gonna air it in its entirety on the network like they did. At least when they did the Samoa Joe title change in Lowell, Massachusetts, or whatever it was, when he beat Finn Balor, they didn't show the whole match and, like, make a big spectacle of it. It was just like, boom, like, Samoa Joe's the fucking NXT champion now, get used to it, it's all over social media, we're gonna show a couple clips of the match, and that was the end of it. With this, they play the whole match, they made a whole big deal, like, Joe Nakamura 3, it's gonna be this episode, and we kind of got this truncated match that just is leading to another rematch, and I guess these two, we'll fight back and forth until we determine who this number one contender is going to be in the William Regal Presents Ty Dillinger's Finally Fucking Going Over Right tournament. So let's hope that happens. Let's hope we get Samoa Joe. I mean, I'll take Samoa Joe versus Ty Dillinger if they want to play that angle, like, you know, where he slapped him and Joe beat him and that almost led him to retire, and now he comes back and he beats Joe. That's great. The 1 5-minute match that Nakamura had with Dillinger on NXT was, like, one of the better 5-minute matches you're ever going to see in your life. It was just so entertaining. So I'm all on board for a extended version of that as well. I'm really inclined to think that maybe Joe's getting his title back and Nakamura's going up north and we're going to get Dillinger Joe, and then Joe can go up shortly after losing to Dillinger. But man, like, I don't want either one of these guys, Joe and Nakamura, that is, like, sticking around NXT for too long. I know, like, I get it. NXT's got to try and make some money, and they got to have some name value on the cards. I get it. But this is just like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I've been watching real sports my whole life. Like, I'm a Mets fan. No, I'm not the Mets fan. I'm a Mets fan. And, you know, it would just be really hard for me to believe that the AAA team would be like, nah, you can't have this guy. Like, I mean, that's the kind of goofy shit that would happen for the Mets, but I'm not going to get into that on this podcast. But, like, bring them up, man. Like, build stars down there. Don't, like, just keep guys down there for your entertainment value. I don't know, man. Like, while I love NXT and I love that they have talent like this, like, I want to see these guys on the big stage, man. Like, I want to start building towards Joe's Royal Rumble debut, or, you know, his run to WrestleMania, or his, like, 200-day U.S. championship reign, or he teams up with Roman Reigns, or teams up with The Rock, or I don't know. Like, there's so much cool shit they could do with Samoa Joe, and while he's doing cool shit in NXT, don't get me wrong, I'm done. I'm ready to move on. Like, he's done everything there is to do. I'm at the point now where I don't even want to see him wrestle Nakamura anymore, although the cage match should be good, and I'm interested to see it. How Nakamura does in a cage. I don't know that Nakamura's ever wrestled in a cage, to my knowledge. I don't think they do cage matches in Japan a whole lot, so this might be a first for him, which would be really cool. I'm sure somebody will, you know, put that stat up somewhere online, but I can't think of a situation in which Shinsuke Nakamura would have been in a cage match, so this is going to be a really interesting experience for him and for us. But that's pretty much it, so I'm going to head into the NXT spotlight here, alumni spotlight, but that's it for episode 367 of NXT. It was a really good episode overall. If I had to give it a rating, and by the way, I was on Red Zone, since we're giving out ratings. CEO, I know you're listening because you're editing this at some point. I give Raw an 8. Like, when I do TVs and stuff like that, like, I lower my expectations. Like, if Raw, like, I gave Raw an 8, but if that Raw was WrestleMania, like, we're talking a 4 at most. Like, you know, like, that's just the way I don't know, I temper my score as per my expectations. So when I go into a regular episode of Raw, I'm not expecting 3 hours of entertainment necessarily. I'm willing to take 2, and I felt like I got close to 3 on Monday, which is why I gave it an 8. So NXT is the same thing here. Like, as far as NXT episodes goes for me, like, this is an 8.5. Like, I was marking out at points when we got the Nikki Cross thing, and when we got Dillinger with that goofy smile on his face, and I came to the realization that sometimes I just buy into my own markdom, which I am absolutely doing in this situation, and thinking Ty Dillinger is going to go over. But I think Ty Dillinger's going over, and I'm, like, ecstatic for it. Like, I'm so happy for the guy. You know, we were talking on Monday about guys who deserve it, and that doesn't always necessarily yield a title reign, as Fane Black explained to me. I want Kofi Kingston to be a world heavyweight champion. I think that motherfucker deserves it, and I think Ty Dillinger deserves to be the NXT champion. And you know what? It's NXT. Why the hell not? Like, you know, they're not the big brand. Like, you could get away with Ty Dillinger being your champion and him taking on other big stars in the indie scene. Eric Young, Bobby Roode, Roderick Strong, you know, Cien Almas. He could fight off all these guys, even Oney Lorcan to a degree, and those can all be compelling matches, and he can, to a degree, at least carry the feud a little bit. You know, like, he's just got that really cool charisma, and it's hard to explain exactly what about him, you know, works, but it does, and I think they're finally coming around to it. And like I said, the William Regal presents Ty Dillinger's finally fucking going over right tournament. Like, I'm excited, and I really hope that happens. And that's it for episode 367 of NXT. Like I said, I gave it an 8.5. I'm standing by it. It was a really entertaining episode of NXT. I got my 4 or 5 segments that I really liked. I got a couple good matches. That's all I can really ask for in an hour. I mean, I don't get that much on Raw or SmackDown sometimes. I got it all in about really 45 minutes with the stupid breaks and all that kind of stuff. You can minus the 5-minute celebration for DIY at the beginning. They crammed a lot of shit in the 30 minutes, and that's awesome. I'm all for it. Feed me more content. I'm the big guy, apparently now. So yeah, like I said, going into the NXT alumni spotlight. That's it for episode 367 of NXT. All right, so the NXT alumni spotlight for this week is for one of the SmackDown women. She has made quite an impact since she's been up on the main roster. She's involved in you know, one of their bigger feuds over on SmackDown at the moment, and I think she's really holding her own in a way that I don't think a lot of people saw. Now, I'm sure some of you are thinking I'm talking about Alexa Bliss, which you could say all of these things about, don't get me wrong. I will definitely at some point do an NXT alumni spotlight about Alexa Bliss. I want to do a little bit of research. She's really come a long way, but the person I'm talking about tonight is Carmella. Carmella, for those of you who don't know, is a former Patriots cheerleader, former Laker girl, and is a second-generation WWE superstar. Her father, Paul Vandale, was a jobber, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, in the 80s. And I guess maybe even early 90s, but yeah, so she does have a little bit of wrestling background in the family. Obviously, Paul wasn't, you know, this had no sort of illustrious career with WWF at the time, but you know, she came in to NXT, and she came into NXT as a direct result of a Enzo and Cass storyline. She was like a hairdresser, and they decided to bring her in, and there was a feud going on between Enzo and, I believe, Marcus Louis, who is now in TNA as part of the Tribunal, and they were having a hair versus hair match, and they brought in this sort of sexy little hairdresser, and she ended up on the show, like, regularly. And I mean, at the time, I kind of thought she was just an actress. I hadn't really seen her do anything wrestling-related, but I guess, knowing what I know now, she was in the Performance Center this whole time working on a wrestling game, and this is how they decided to debut her. So we all obviously know Carmella, you know, from her days of being with Enzo and Cass, and the fact that she is hot as hell, and you can't teach that. She is, in real life, Big Cass's girlfriend, you know, that they, obviously being on separate shows, probably not exactly the best case scenario for them, but having said that, you know, maybe it is good for them to get a little bit of separation, focus on their respective careers. Maybe that was the idea. Maybe that wasn't even a consideration. I mean, frankly, they're both relatively new. I don't think that WWE went out of their way to split them up, and I frankly don't think that they were going to put all that much consideration into keeping them together. They clearly had plans for Carmella, because it would have been so easy to keep her on Raw with Enzo and Cass, and they could do the, you know, the whole shtick with all three of them, like they did in NXT, and it, you know, it worked. And Enzo and Cass are great on Raw, don't get me wrong, they are killing it as well, but, you know, there is, like, that part of me that when Enzo goes through his shtick, that he's gonna get to that third introduction that he used to do with Carmella, but obviously he doesn't do that anymore. Hopefully one day they do reunite, but obviously they're baby faces on Raw. Carmella's a fairly effective heel on SmackDown. I mean, they threw her into a feud with Nikki Bella, who by no means is, like, you know, this in-ring technical wizard, but she's been around a while. She's come a long way as far as her performance goes in the ring. Her promos are still god-awful, but, I mean, that's neither here nor there. I think there's just a certain barrier. I was talking about this on Red Zone last week, or earlier in the week, rather. No, it was last week, and I was talking about Nikki Bella in particular, and she sort of has just this stench of divas wrestling, which is just, to me at this point, like, seeing what I've seen now, like, I'm super pissed that we haven't had women's wrestling as we know it now for the last 10 years, because I can only imagine, like, you know, if they actually really put an emphasis on the women, the kind of stuff that we would have seen, as I was saying, the CEO and Mimi, you know, the internet's a wonderful place. If I want to see attractive, scantily clad women, I could do that. Like, it's a few clicks away. Google will hook me up. You know, when I watch wrestling, I want to see wrestling. But having said that, as another great wrestling podcaster has said, you know, this is Peter Rosenberg of Cheap Heat, is that, you know, when it's really good wrestling and they're really attractive women, I mean, that's the best case scenario. So I'm a guy. It is what it is. Not to steal CEO's line, even though I did happen to you know, obviously steal his assistant, Phyllis, that is. So, you know, but there's a lot going on right now in the world of women's wrestling, and there really is only one solid feud that's existed away from a title since the draft, and it has been this Nikki Bella and Carmella feud. And obviously Nikki's not carrying it on the mic. She's there. She does her shtick in the in you know, as far as going in ring, and you know, she's Nikki Bella. I mean, she's just the mainstay at this point. She's going to be around as long as she wants to be. She's John Cena's girlfriend. That's no secret. Total divas, total Bellas are huge hits. You know, whether or not you're a particular fan of her, WWE thinks she's a big deal, and they put her in a feud with Carmella. Carmella has a lot of similar attributes. Obviously, they're both attractive. They're both, you know, kind of have this weird, sort of annoying pitch to their voice, and You know, they have, I guess, they sort of dress similarly. I mean, like, they kind of always have, like, a midriff thing going and, you know, the hats and whatever. But they you know, from a distance, you could definitely look at the two of them and kind of group them together. But Carmella's really held her own on the mic. Carmella's one of the few people I've ever seen successfully put down a what chant and put it down quickly. And then they also, a couple weeks ago on SmackDown, or maybe even this week on SmackDown, they were chanting "How you doing?" at her, obviously a reference to her time with Enzo and Cass. And, you know, she turned that right around on them, too. She's clearly comfortable working in front of large crowds. This is sort of part of the... There was a Reddit post about Carmella, you know, kind of standing out in this new movement of women's wrestling where she hasn't really been given much, but she's certainly doing a lot with it. She's got some above-average skills on the mic, I'd say, as far as the women go. Not to say that the women are worse, but they just, frankly, have less time and less practice than the men do. I mean, they've been cutting promos forever. They get a lot of time on TV, whereas the women haven't until recently. So it's one thing to sit in the back or sit in the performance center and stand in front of a couple people and cut some promos. Like, I do this shit on a regular basis. I go on the tirades at work about politics or whatever the hell I want to, you know, I happen to be talking about. And, you know, because I'm a wrestling fan, in my head, like, it's just, I'm in promo mode. Like, I'm just going. But to do it in front of crowds of 10,000, 20,000 people on a weekly basis and to be consistent in doing it when it's clearly not something that is necessarily your strong suit, you know, it takes a lot of guts to do, and she's turned it around really well. If you remember when she first appeared on SmackDown, she was doing the face thing. She was like female Enzo, except she just doesn't have the charisma, and she's not, you know, Smack Talker Skywalker, the Michael Jordan of jargon. Like, she's just, she doesn't have that gift that Enzo does. And they tried to kind of play her off as the same way. There was that weird sort of tag match that occurred at SummerSlam where Nikki Bella appeared, and despite the fact, you know, she kind of got teamed up and thrown in at the last minute because Eva Marie wasn't there. So Nikki Bella being sort of a face and definitely getting a face pop upon her return. I mean, she's coming back from a really substantial neck injury, and that's something to certainly commend her for fighting back and for working her way back into the ring. But they throw her into SummerSlam in Eva Marie's spot in like a six-woman tag, and it was very strange. Like, she ended up on the heel team, and then Carmella was on the face team, and they had sort of a thing going on SmackDown the next night, and Carmella jumps her because she supposedly outshined her or tried to steal her thunder, or whatever the case may be. That wasn't really necessarily driven home very strongly on SummerSlam or on that SmackDown, but since then, Carmella just comes from out of nowhere. She's jumping Nikki on the set of Talking Smack. She's jumping Nikki in the back. We don't really know what the deal is with the most recent attack on Nikki Bella. Obviously, a lot of people are going to assume it's Natalya because that's what we were told on SmackDown yesterday. I personally think that this is Carmella playing mind games, is that she found, like, one of Nikki's friends from Total Divas, and she also found a motive for that particular person to attack Nikki, and she's gonna try and turn Nikki against Natalya, all the while just kind of sitting back and laughing at this misery that she's causing her. It really doesn't get any more heelish than that. I mean, obviously, she could go a little bit farther with it, but, you know, just enjoying somebody else's misery is about the most heel characteristic you can have, and she's really coming off strong with that. Like I said, I mean, this is a feud that's going on away from one of the women's titles right now. We have two spectacular feuds going on surrounding the two women's titles right now. Obviously, Charlotte and Sasha Banks, I could wax poetic about them all day, as you probably know if you listen to the show, but Alexa Bliss is just slaying on SmackDown right now, and she has turned herself into a bona fide star. Absolutely one of the top two on SmackDown, no doubt about it. May even be, at this point, a bigger deal than Becky Lynch even, but she's really playing an awesome foil for Becky to chase, and that's really where Becky's role is going to be. It's sort of hard to, like, in that particular situation, to be excited about Becky getting her comeuppance, or rather, Alexa Bliss getting her comeuppance from Becky. Becky's just bigger and more physically imposing and more strong and more experienced and stronger in every way possible. Becky Lynch should be beating Alexa Bliss, except for this weird sort of shystiness that I guess Alexa Bliss has going on. It would be really cool to see Becky Lynch try to climb the mountain that is Nia Jax, or go toe-to-toe with Asuka, or fuck it, bring Ronda Rousey in, let's see them fight, and she could kind of play like a female Conor McGregor role, which is something I think she tries to bring out from time to time. She's clearly inspired by him, not only because he's Irish, but because he's obviously a big deal in the world of combat sports. It works really well for her, but Carmella, getting back to her, like I said, I mean, she's just clearly improved in all facets. I mean, she's never been a bad in-ring worker. The code of silence is a excellent finishing maneuver, particularly with Nikki Bella, who obviously has a neck injury. So it works, even better in that particular circumstance. Carmella, you know, like I said, she's hot as hell, and you can't teach that. She's having a hell of a run. I would expect that once Becky Lynch gets that title back, or if Alexa Bliss decides to turn face for whatever reason at some point in the near future, like, Carmella's got to be in the running for a title shot at some point. I mean, granted, she did just lose to Nikki Bella, but Nikki Bella, like I said on Red Zone, I don't see her necessarily getting too close to the title right away. I think she'll get it one more time before she ultimately goes away. I don't think that time is now, although I don't know I'd necessarily complain if it were. But yeah, Carmella is, you know, like I said, she's doing a really good job of holding her own. She was set up all through NXT where she was just sort of the third person in this triumvirate of awesome, overly Italian kind of shtick, I guess. I don't even know. Like, I'm from New Jersey. They're all very Jersey, even though she's from Boston, supposedly from Staten Island. Enzo's actually from Jersey, and then I think Cass is from somewhere in New York. But, you know, it's just that whole tri-state vibe, and she was really, all we ever knew was that she was hanging out with Enzo and Cass all the time, and she wore the leopard, and she, I guess, is dating Cass on the side, and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. She's really held her own on SmackDown, and she's doing the best with what she's got to work with here. She's got minimal time, not necessarily minimal time, but obviously she could have more time, being that it's the second women's feud on a two-hour show. You know, she could certainly have been giving a little bit more to work with. And Nikki Bella, you know, it is what it is. Again, the tech CEO's line, damn, I was just listening to his show right before I recorded, so I may be jacking a few of his lines. Sorry, Hayes. But, you know, we end up with Carmella at the end of the day. Hopefully she can keep going with this. Maybe she even gets a title shot. She could really cement herself into the women's division as a mainstay and as a threat and as a perennial contender. And then maybe she goes face again and she ends up back with Enzo and Cass. I think that'd be really good. And, you know, just before I wrap up here, is that there have obviously been the comparisons between Liv Morgan and NXT to Carmella. Liv Morgan is, you know, actually from New Jersey. She's, oddly enough, Enzo's girlfriend in real life, or at least to the last that I checked. And she gets sort of this, like, quote-unquote Carmella light label. And if there's anything that she could take away from Carmella, is to just watch what she's doing on SmackDown and try to distance herself from this, like, overtly Jersey thing. Like, I'm very proud of being from New Jersey, but I fully understand that, you know, the rest of the country doesn't necessarily appreciate it as much as, you know, somebody from New Jersey does. Hell, New York ain't that different from us, but they don't like us either. So, you know, it is what it is. I gotta stop doing that. So, you know, she needs to try to distance herself a little bit from, I guess, where she's from, and, you know, kind of build a character based on more of her. Like, what kind of music do you like? What kind of movies do you like? What kind of characters do you identify with? Who are your role models? Like, try and pick from all of that and come up with something that you can do that's independent from Enzo, Cass, and Carmella, because up until you do that, you're never going to be taken seriously. I don't know why I'm lecturing Liv Morgan as if she listens to my fucking show, but I'm going to do it anyway. So, like I said, the NXT Alumni Spotlight tonight is about Carmella. A tip of the cap to her for the excellent work she's been doing, the progress she's been making, and, you know, she's turned a non-title women's feud into something worth watching, which, if you can find an example of that, go right ahead and hit me up on Twitter. I would love to go back and watch something like that, because I can't even think of one that was even remotely relevant that didn't involve a title. So, like I said, on Twitter, at WWPNBello, on Gmail, WWPN@gmail.com, and obviously go to the WWPN.com, check out all the shows, the articles, the YouTube channel, all of our contact information. We have a hotline. You can go on there. You can leave a voicemail for your favorite host, me. it's an all-encompassing website. We started as a podcast network. Actually, we started. I didn't start. I hopped on sort of late in the game, but ever so grateful to be here. CEO, as he called me the other day, his podcasting soulmate. Man, I feel the same way. It's really weird. It's almost like we're connected somehow. But yeah, we do have a great time doing all this stuff, and we hope you guys enjoy it. We want to do more of it for you. like CEO said on Blue Zone the other night. And by the way, guys, we can't leave CEO to his device, to his own devices anymore. It just sitting there listening to him kind of rant by himself. I mean, I can listen to the man talk all day, but I could tell it was sort of bumming him out that he didn't have anybody to talk to. So, you know, guys, anybody out there who's a host on the network, like, you know, give the man some notice, or at least give him enough notice to where maybe he could give me some notice that I could sit my ass down, watch SmackDown on time, and do the show with him. But yeah, he's like me. Like, if you leave him to his own devices, like, shit's gonna go bananas. Fortunately enough for me, he just allows my bullshit to go on, and he allows it on his network, actually encourages it. So thank you again, man. And again, a happy 30th birthday to CEO Hayes. As I always say, and this is not a moniker, folks, this is legit. He is the hardest working man in the wrestling podcast industry. He just busts his ass. He puts so much time into this network, and it's really an honor to be involved with somebody who puts that sort of effort in. Check out all the other shows, guys. Strong Style Central, Blue Zone, Red Zone, Throwback with JB, the Next Level Wrestling Podcast. That's me. You're already listening to it, but go ahead. Subscribe, like, share, all that good stuff helps the algorithms, helps us get our name out there, maybe draws a little bit more attention to us. Maybe we can make a couple bucks. We could donate some more time. We could get some better equipment. We could put out some better content for you, because we appreciate every second that you spend listening to us, reading our stuff, going online, sharing your tweets. It's humbling. So that's pretty much it for the night, guys. Thank you as always. Phyllis, if you're ready, I'm going to tell the people good night. All right. Good night, people. Peace. Clap your hands and tell me bravo. If I play with that pussy like a guitar, Desperado. When I pluck that pussy, you say play it, poppy. When I pluck that pussy, you say play it, poppy. Clap your hands and tell me bravo. If I play with that pussy like a guitar, Desperado. Bring that body closer, La Chica. Miss Mamacita, my sexy La Senorita. Long hair, brunette from Costa Rica. If I play a few melodies, you sing to me like Selena. Miss
Aquafina. Wait. Bello just try to steal my Phyllis? Boy, I tell you. They grow up so fast and they just want to steal your personal assistance. Well. Till next time, I guess. Ain't like a low rider Chevy. So deep, I think I've reached a limit. When you reach an orgasm, you make it sprint like it's confetti. Long hair, tattoos, leather vest, like machete. Going down on your boys, suck it hard, no spaghetti. Massage your walls with a three-finger melody. When I play with that pussy like a guitar, if you let me. All black like Movado, and she feeling good sipping on that rose Moscato. Clap your hands and tell me bravo. If I play with that pussy like a guitar, Desperado. When I pluck that pussy, you say play it, poppy. When I pluck that pussy, you say play it, poppy. Clap your hands and tell me bravo. If I play with that pussy like a guitar, Desperado. Let me show you what a freak can do. Suck on a pussy like a snagger too. Graduated out of LSU. Girl, you fine with all kind of attributes, huh? Eat it up like cocktail fruit. I guess you do me like baby through apple juice. Dancing ass nigga. Play the pussy like Fruity Loops. Girl, you feel the beat. Building in the sheets. Every stroke, it's like basal vibrating numb in your feet. I know I'm deep when you start gritting on your teeth. And your nails get to scratching my back, exposing the meat.